I don't know what happened to me or one day it was the same or not the same, I don't care. But I was really afraid for dying. And also not being able to breathe anymore. And as soon as I feel something coming up like that, I'm scared to death.
Yes, that prevented the possibility of the physical body going through the process of actual physical dying. The body has to go through it. Because every thought that everybody felt before you, every experience that everybody experienced before you, every feeling that everybody felt before you, all that is part of your being. So you can't come into your own unless the whole thing is completely and totally flushed out, you see, if I may use that word, out of your system. See, that is something which you cannot do or make it happen with any effort or volition of yours. So when the time comes, you see, you may not have asked for it, you see. You may not have asked for it. You would never ask for the end of you, as you know yourself, as you experience yourself. Sometimes it does happen, you see. So, the fear of something coming to an end, the fear of what you know, as yourself and as you experience yourself, prevented the possibility of the whole thing snapping out there. See? And you are lucky enough, you see, that would have happened and the whole thing would have fallen into its natural rhythm, which is discontinuous and disconnected. See, that is the way, you see, the thought functions. There is no continuity of thought. And the only way it can maintain its continuity is through the constant demand for experiencing the same thing over and over and over again. So what is there is the knowledge you have about yourself and about the world around you. And the world around you is not quite different from the world you have created for yourself inside of you. I don't want to give a talk. What you are frightened of is not you, but that movement of thought is frightened of is the continuity coming to an end.
Yes.
So it is interested in finding out, or it projects, you see, always the fear, you see.
When I was two, I also drowned.
Yes.
And I couldn't get air.
Yes.
So, I think that's an excuse.
True, but you see, it's not an easy thing, you know, to go through that. It's a tremendous effort on your part to prevent the whole of thing being sucked into something like a vacuum cleaner, you know. You see, the whole of your energy, everything that is there, is drawn into something like, you see, sucking everything that is there into this sort of vacuum cleaner. See, that's a very frightening situation.
Yeah.
So the fear is its protective mechanism. The fear is the protective mechanism.
I see.
So the physical fear is altogether different. The physical fear is very simple, you see. The physical fear is there only for the survival of the living organism. So you have, through your thinking and experiences built on the foundation of that physical fear, which is essential for survival, what you call is a psychological fear. You know, the fear of what you know coming to an end. So the body knows that, you see, it is immortal. I very deliberately use the word immortal because nothing there comes to an end. See, the way it is put together, when what you call clinical death takes place, it breaks itself into its constituent elements. That's all that happens, you see. So it may not reconstitute again and create, you see, the body which you think is yours, and at the same time, see, when once it breaks itself into its constituent elements, it provides the basis for the continuity of life. So it may not be of any consolation or great feeling of happiness to the individual who is dying, but this becomes, you see, the food for the millions and millions of bacteria. You know that? So even assuming for a moment that you resort to the cremation, as they do in some countries, the carbon, which is the resultant of the burnt body, provides, you see, the basis for something coming out of the earth, you know, you see, some tiny little flower coming out of the earth where, you see, you dump all this, you know, the ashes. So nothing here is lost. So when there is actually a physical danger, the danger of the extinction of your physical body, which you think is yours, then everything that it has at its resources throws into that situation and tries to survive in that particular moment. I don't know if you have ever noticed, when there is a real physical danger, your thinking mechanism is never there to help you. Never there. See, you can plan ahead, you see, of every possible situation and be prepared to meet every kind of a situation in your life, but actually when there is a physical danger, all your planning and all your all that you have thought about, you see, to be prepared to meet every kind of a danger in every kind of a situation, it is just not there. So it has to fall back on its own resources. So if for some reason it cannot renew itself and survive in that particular situation, it goes merrily and gracefully. So it knows nothing is lost. So this living organism is not interested in the continuity in terms of years. So this is functioning from moment to moment. You see, all these the religious people who are trying to interpret the religious texts in terms of living from moment to moment is a thought-induced state of mind, you see. So the sensory perceptions function from moment to moment. There is no continuity of your physical seeing. There is no continuity of your physical hearing. There is no continuity of your smelling. There is no continuity when you eat something. There is no continuity in the sensory thing called the sense of touch. You see, they are all disconnected and disjointed. But the thought, in its interest to maintain itself and to continue without any interruption, demands these experiences all the time. You see, that is the only way it can maintain its continuity. You know, so the body functions in a completely different way, and it is not interested in the activity of the thought. The only thought that is necessary for this body is the thought that it has to use for the survival of the living organism. Even, you see, if you do not feed this body, it is not concerned about it. You see. So it has a certain resources which you have built up, you see, through years of your eating. It falls back and lives on it. When that is finished, it goes. So for a day or two, probably you feel the hunger tantrums at the same time you regularly eat. But the body is not really concerned whether you feed the body or not feed the body. So at the same time, it is foolish and perverse not to feed the body. hoping that, you see, will attain some spiritual goals. That's what they do in India. They put the body through all kinds of stresses and strains, torture it, you know, because they feel that through this endurance, they will be able to achieve whatever their spiritual goals may be. So, you see, there is nothing that you can do to make that happen through any will of yours, through any effort of yours, through any volition of yours. So that is the reason why I always maintain that if this kind of a thing happens, it is not something mysterious. You see, the thought falling into its natural rhythm of discontinuous and disconnected functioning. That's all. That's all that is there. So then thought is in harmony with the sensory perceptions, the activity of the senses. So there is no conflict there, there is no struggle there is no pain there. There is a harmonious relationship between the two. Whenever there is a need for thought, that thought is always there to act, you see. So the act that this body is interested in is only the action that is essential for the survival of the living body. And it's not interested in any ideas you have about, you see, your religious goals or material goals. It's not at all interested. So there is always, you see, this constant battle between these two things. So the thought is not something mysterious, which is what the culture has put in there, which is, of course, society. They are not different, culture and society. And the society is interested in continuity, in permanence. It is interested in status quo. So it is all the time maintaining that status quo. So that is where the thought is helpful for the society. And it says if you don't act that way, if you don't think that way, you become, you see, antisocial, because all your actions will become, you see, thoughtless, impulsive actions. So it is interested in channeling every thought of yours in that particular direction which maintains the status quo of the society. So that's why there is basically, essentially, and fundamentally a conflict between these two. The culture, which is not yours, which is not mine, but we have adopted that, accepted that, to use it as a means of survival. That's all. So that has a momentum of its own, totally unrelated to it. As long as you use that, so long you are not an individual at all. You can become an individual only when you break away from the totality of that wisdom. So there is no such thing as your mind or my mind. Maybe there is such a thing as the world mind. It's where all the cumulative knowledge and the experiences thereof is accumulating and passed on from generation to generation. So we have to use that to function in this world sanely and intelligently. If we don't use it, you see, as I was saying the other day, we'll end up in, a funny form and sing the loony tunes and merry melodies. So you don't want to become part of the society, you give up, you see, there. And that's the end of you. And the society is still interested, you see, in fitting every individual into that framework and maintains continuity. I don't want to give a talk. So I don't know if I have made myself clear. That's the reason why I'm all the time emphasizing the physical aspect, you see, and not with the idea of selling out something, you see, but to emphasize this and express it in what you call enlightenment, liberation, moksha, mutation, transformation, only in pure and simple physical and physiological, you see, both same physical and physiological, but to emphasize, I use those two words, physical and physiological terms, and there is absolutely no religious content to it and no mystical overtones or undertones to this functioning of the body. But unfortunately, for centuries, they have interpreted the whole thing in some religious terms, and that has created the misery for us all. So the more you try to revive or, you see, push it through the back door when there is no interest in the religious life of the man, you are only adding more and more to the misery also. So I'm not interested in propagating this, you see, you know. This is not something which you can make it happen, nor is it possible for me to create that, you see, hunger which is essential to understand anything, you know. So, I repeat this again and again, but repetition has its own charm. You see, you are assuming for a moment that you are hungering from spiritual attainments, and you are all the time reaching out to reach your goal. And so you see, naturally, you see that there are so many people, you see, in the marketplace, you know, ugly saints, you know, selling all kinds of shoddy piece of spiritual goods. For whatever reason they are doing it, it's not our concern. But they are doing it, you see. They say it is for the welfare of mankind, you see, and then you see, they do it out of compassion for mankind and all that kind of a thing. All that is bullshit anyway. So what I'm trying to say is that you are satisfied, see, with the crumbs they throw at you, and they promise that one day they are going to deliver you a full loaf of bread. That's just a promise. They cannot deliver the goods at all. They just don't have it, you know. So they can only cut it into pieces and distribute it to the people. When people ask me some questions, you see, I answer in a very funny way the question about Jesus, you know, materializing loaves of bread. I said, and repeat it, that he did not materialize loaves and loaves of bread, but he just cut whatever bread was there available into small bits and distributed it, you see, to everybody there. Naturally, you want to attribute some miracles and all kinds of things. But what I'm trying to say is that hunger has got to burn itself up. Every day I'm saying the same thing, but using different words, you see, putting these things in different places. That's all that I can do. My vocabulary is very, very limited, so I have to use the words again and again and emphasize the same thing all over again to point out that the hunger, if there is, you see, to find out for yourself and by yourself, it has to burn itself out, you know. So there is no use feeding yourself with all this kind of junk food, you see, you know. There is no use of your waiting, you see, for something to happen to satisfy your hunger. So there is no point in satisfying that hunger. The hunger has to burn itself out. Literally it has to burn itself out. You know, not the physical, even physical hunger has to burn itself out so that the physical death can take place. So that just the way you feel thirsty, you know, you are satisfied with these dozens of quench thirsters that they are advertising, you know, Pepsi Cola, Coca-Cola, Fanta, God knows what, you see, all of them. So they are all supposed to be the thirst quenchers, but they really do not do anything there. The thirst for it has to burn itself out. It, you know, actual dehydration of the body takes place. Thank God the physical body has certain things to protect itself when a physical dehydration takes place. I don't know if you have meditated for hours and hours. The whole body reaches a point where the dehydration takes place. Then you have these lifesavers there, you see, in your body, the saliva. You know, there is a profuse saliva coming out, you see, to quench your thirst and save you in that particular situation. When you push this body to do certain things, through meditation, through yoga, all kinds of things people do, you know, overdo these things. So, there is one thing that I'm emphasizing all the time, you see, it is not because of what you do or what you do not do that this kind of a thing happens, and why it happens to one individual and not another, there is no answer to that question. I assure you that it is not the man who has prepared himself, you see, or purified himself for whatever reason to be ready, you see, to receive that kind of a thing. It is the other way around, you see. So, it hits, you know, it hits at random. That is the way the nature operates. A lightning hits you somewhere, you see, it is not interested, you see, whether it is hitting, you see, a tree that is blooming, or is it has fruits, it is helping, you see, the people in providing shade, etc. But it just hits at random. In exactly the same way, it happens to a particular individual, and that happening is acausal.
Acausal.
It has no cause. There are so many things happening in nature which have no, which cannot be attributed to any particular cause.
Yeah.
So you were interested in studying the lives of the people or the biographies of those people you think who are enlightened or godmen or some such thing, is to find out, you see, a clue as to how it happened, you see, to them, so that you can use that, you see, whatever technique they use, then make it happen to you. That's all, that is the interest. You see, those people are giving you some techniques, some systems, some methods, which don't work at all. They create the hope that somehow, through some miracle, one day, you see, it is going to happen to you, but it will never happen. So I have said my my piece. And I have to repeat this again and come to it from 10 different angles, depending upon the nature of questions which you throw at me, but all questions are exactly the same as I said yesterday. Because the questions spring from the answers you already have. You know, the answers given by others are not really the answers. I am not giving any answers to you, see. If I am foolish enough to give you the answers, you have to understand that, you see, this is the very answer which you think is the answer, is destroying the possibility of that question disappearing. You know? You have to take my word, I don't care if you take my word or not, that such questions never, never, never occur to me, you know. I have no questions of any kind except the questions I need to ask somebody, you see, where can I rent a car? What is the quickest way to go to Brussels? You see, and you see such questions, you know, which way to Rotterdam, this road or that road, that's all. You see, there are people always to help you. But those questions have no answers. You see, when this dawns on you, such questions have no answers. And as a matter of fact, those questions spring from the answers you already have. So what is necessary in that situation is the complete and total blasting, you see, of the answers that you have. That is something which you cannot make it happen. It is not in your hands. So the situation you think is hopeless, but it is not hopeless. The hope is here. See, the hope is not there. You are waiting for something to happen tomorrow. Tomorrow nothing will happen. Whatever has to happen, that has got to happen, you see, now. And the possibility of that happening now is practically and well nigh impossible, because the instrument which you are using is the past.
Yeah.
So, unless the past comes to an end, there can't be any present. The now, the present moment. And that present moment is something which cannot be captured by you, cannot be experienced by you. You see? So even assuming for a moment that the past has come to an end, you have no way of knowing that it has come to an end. You see, so then there is no future for you at all. There may be a future tomorrow, you will become boss of your company in which you are working, I don't know. The school teacher becomes the head of the institution and professor becomes the dean. You see, that possibility is there, but you have to put in a lot of struggle, you know, that takes time. So you are applying the same technique, you see. That is the only thing, that instrument which you are using to realize whatever you are interested in. And so it puts it there in the future. So it has produced tremendous results in this world. So how can that instrument be not the instrument to achieve your spiritual goals, if there are any spiritual goals you have before them? So that is not the instrument, obviously, because you have tried, you see, you have done everything possible. Even those who are burning with hunger, they find it, you see, it's impossible, you know. In India, everybody, you see, tried this. You won't believe that, you see. Not one was lucky enough. So whenever such a thing happened, it happened to those people who had given up completely and totally all their search. You know, that's an absolute requisite for that kind of a thing. The whole movement has to slow down, you see, and come to a stop. But anything you do to make it stop is only adding momentum to it. That's really the crux of the problem. So what you are interested in doesn't exist. It's your own imagination based upon the knowledge you have about those things. And so there is nothing that you can do about it. You are chasing something that does not exist at all. I can say that, you see, until the cows return home. I don't know when they return home here, or the kingdom come, but that kingdom will never, never come. So you keep on going, hoping that somehow, you see, you will find some way of achieving your goal. So your interest in attaining that for the purpose of solving your day-to-day problems is a far-fetched idea, because that cannot be of any help to you to solve your problems. That is very essential. So if I had that enlightenment, you see, I would be able to solve all my problems. You know, so you cannot have all that, you see, and enlightenment, you see. When that comes, it wipes out everything. You see, you want all this and heaven too. Not a chance. So that is something which cannot be made to happen through your effort or through the grace of anybody, through the help of even a God walking on the face of this earth, claiming that he has specially descended from wherever, you see, from whatever heavens, for your sake and for the sake of mankind. That is just absolute gibberish. So nobody can help you. Help you to achieve what? That is the question, you see. You know, as long as your goal is there, so long, you see, these persons and their promises and their techniques look very, very attractive to you. You know? They go together. So is not sadhana necessary? Is not something you must do? You see, anyway you are doing, you see, you know? So can I be without doing anything? You can't be without doing anything. Unfortunately, you are doing something. And the doing has got to come to an end. And in order to bring that doing to come to an end, you are doing something else. That is really the crux of the problem. That's really the situation in which you find yourself. That's all that I can say. See, point out the absurdity of what you are doing. As I said yesterday, you see, what brings you here will certainly take you somewhere else. You know? So you have nothing to get here, you see, you will not get anything here. Not that I want to keep the things for myself, you see. You can take anything you want, you know. I have nothing to give you, you see. I am not anything that you are not. You think that I am something different. And the thought that, you see, that I am different from others never enters my head. Never. Only when you ask questions, you see, I feel, why are these people asking these questions? How can I make them see? You know, I still have some trace of illusion. Maybe I should make, I can try. You see, even the trial, you see, has no meaning to me. So there's nothing that I can do about it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to get. Not to give and nothing to get. That is the situation, you know. In material world, yes, we have a lot of things, you see. There's always somebody who can help you, you see, with the knowledge, with the money, with, you see, so many things, you know, in the world. But here, in this field, there's nothing to give and nothing to get. So, as long as you want, you can be certain you ain't got a chance. Whatever you want, you see. You know, I'm not suggesting you are not getting it. You see, wanting implies that you are going to set in motion thinking to achieve your goal. So it is not a question of achieving your goal, but it is a question of this movement. Coming to an end here, you know. So if you want, the only thing that you can do is to set in motion this movement of thought in the direction of achieving that. How are you going to achieve this impossible task? So wanting and thinking, they always go together. If you don't want a thing, I'm not for a moment suggesting that you should suppress all your wants and free yourself from all your wants and control all your wants. Not at all. That's the religious game. So if you want anything, the one thing that you will do is to set in motion the movement of thought to achieve your goal. Material goals, yes, you see, but even there, you see, it's not so easy. It is such a competitive world, not much left for us to, to share. Not enough to go around. Since this is not an experience, the talk of sharing with somebody is poppycock to me. See, there's nothing to be shared here. It's not an experience. Even assuming for a moment that this is an experience, even then, it is so difficult to share with somebody else, unless the other individual has some reference point within the framework of his experiencing structure. So then you see the whole business becomes a sort of meaningless ritual, you know, sitting and discussing these matters. That's all. It's not so easy for you to give up.
Oh, no.
Not at all, you see.
This thing happened to me when I didn't know anything about anything.
Yes.
I was just sitting, doing meditation.
Nothing, you see, it just happened.
But I just was sitting down on the floor and it happened.
Yes, so?
I was scared to death about it.
That's all right, you see, now you see. You so want that to happen again? No.
No, because it was a nice experience at all. But
yes.
When it happens, it's all right.
Yes, but your spiritual search, you see, ends that way. There is no other way. It's not that I'm frightening you, but how do you expect that to happen? That is why, you see, all those people who have taken drugs experience all kinds of things, you know. Those who have not heard of anything, you see, of this kind, suddenly experience so many things. And that puts them on this merry-go-round. So India has any number of techniques, systems, methods to give you every kind of experience you want. That is why they are doing a tremendously roaring business.
But it didn't even come in my head to associate it with meditation or with this or with that, because it was something different.
Yes, it happened. It happened. You see, such things happen, some extraordinary experiences. People experience without knowing, without asking for them, without doing any such things. So when once, you see, this was a frightening experience for you, but other spiritual experiences. So they want to, you see, make them happen again and again and again. You know? Anything you make it happen, you see, there's no meaning at all. So then you see, you will want more and more of those things, and then when you succeed in having more and more of those things, you demand for some kind of a permanent situation. Permanent happiness, permanent bliss, and there is no such thing as permanence at all.
That was not a bliss at all.
No. Probably it would have ended, resulted in bliss, who knows.
Does it imply that there is nothing the matter?
Well, is man ripe for nuclear energy? We are playing with all these energies. Can we have it?
The nuclear energy?
Yes.
We will have it after 5 billion years, they say that. The physicists say that, you know, the radiation will destroy this planet. You see, these people are very impatient.
So where are we going?
So we are going to, you know,
next stage.
Sow these mushrooms. Cultivate them. We are cultivating them with great care. They are not edible mushrooms. Not even poisonous. They are deadly. They are going to wipe out everything that man has built for centuries, you know.
Is that what you foresee or what you
feel? No, 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 not. I don't, I'm not a prophet of any doom or any such thing. I'm not, I don't have any clairvoyant vision of the shape of things to come. But that future is already here. You know, what do you expect? What are we doing all this for? You can't even destroy them, you know that. Assuming for a moment that we will all become peaceful and decide, you see, to do away with them, what are you going to do with this pileup of weapons here, there, everywhere? You can't throw them in the ocean, you see, it will poison the waters, and it will, you see, if you try to explode them, you see, it will boil. Pollute the air, you see, there's nothing that you can do. So we have set in motion forces that will engulf the whole thing and finish everything. It's not that I am a prophet of doom or anything. Please don't get me wrong. Maybe man will realize somewhere along the line that he cannot, you see, step on the toes of somebody else, you know, climb on the shoulders of others, that he's going to do the same thing. See, if you try to liquidate somebody else, you are going to be liquidated physically. You know, that's happening in the international field now. You know, there was a time when the Dulles, I call him, you see, he was Dulles, you know, the Secretary of State in the United States. He kept all these planes flying. Lunatic he was, with nuclear weapons. Then, you see, he talked of Matsu retaliation. If he had done that, probably things would have been different. Anyway, the ups and buts of history, you see, nobody can adequately and satisfactorily answer those questions. Now they dare not talk of that. There was a time, the Time magazine used, referring to the United States, the mightiest, the most powerful, the richest nation in the whole world. Now, what do they say? It's one of the superpowers. So there will be many more superpowers. So they are talking of detente. So they know, they realize the consequences of such a thing. Both of them are lunatics, you see, you know. So they are insane. The people who even talk of using those weapons on a limited scale, you see, do they realize what they are talking? Why are the scientists silent, you see? Because they are also part of the game, you know. They cannot be exonerated. The research is not such an altruistic one. It's motivated by their personal aggrandizement, you see, personal power they want, you know. So, they are also part of the game, you see. So what do you do in such a situation? We are hopeless. Individually, there isn't a damn thing that you can do about it. Collectively means, you know, one group against another group. That is the frightening situation. So how do you expect any miracles? You are preparing all the time for war.
Aren't you one of the miracles?
Huh?
Aren't you one of the miracles?
Me?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
What's happening to you? Might it be a mutation of a man looking beyond those problems?
I'm not looking beyond. I'm looking at the realistic situation. You see, I'm not a cynic. People call me a cynic sometimes, you see, or I don't know what you called me yesterday, you see, nihilist and all kinds of things. But you don't look at the things exactly the way they are. How can you expect, you see, a peaceful world in this, in a situation where three-fourths of the world is underfed, you see, starving? It's not possible. They just don't have the means, you see, to walk in here. Good friends, you see, don't imagine that your hard work that resulted in your wealth. But anyway, we want to share, you know. So they don't have the means. You see, you can call them terrorists, you can call them this, that and the other. The day they have these nuclear grenades, and we will all sing a different song, you know. So we are pushing the things, you see. After me the deluge, you know, you see, we are going step by step, you see, in the direction of destroying ourselves. It is foolish to do that. And yet, there doesn't seem to be, you see, any sign of wisdom anywhere in any individual. Just to talk. What can you do as an individual? Not a thing. The situation is so hopeless. If you start a party or, you see, anti-nuclear groups, you know, anti- bomb, ridiculous, you know. They are not the ones. You see. The problems created by them have to be tackled by them. That is what I tell my friends. You see, don't look to the East. East has no answers for your problems at all. For the lost souls, yes, maybe. You know, but for your problems, they don't have any solutions. Don't look to these gods. The technological problems are there, you see, they have to be tackled and answered by, you see, the technologies. If you go there and look, you see, to these yogis, they don't have any answers for your problems. They have made a mess of all those countries where these people existed. Huh? What have they done? Look at India, look at China, look at all those countries. Where are they now? So there is no use looking to those nations for hope. On the other hand, they have to get some answers for their problems from the West. Otherwise, we will all sink together. You know, if you don't find out the answers and come out with solutions for the problems that are facing the world, then we will all sink. Those solutions are no solutions at all. Talking of brotherhood, love, humanity, oneness of life, what nonsense is it? Where is that oneness of life? Go there. They are more mercenary than the people here, you see, in the West. You'll be surprised. You have to live with them, you know. Not just visit the country and look at them. Live with them, you see. You know. So those countries have no message for the world. I'm sorry to say that. I come from those lands. I have spent half my life in the West, so I know what I'm talking about. I know the West as well. So the answers have to come from your people. You have created this mess. They don't have any answers. Gods, avatars, no. Bhagavans, they have no answers. Just talk and talk and talk, you see, of love, brotherhood. For centuries, man has been talking of love. You know, love thy neighbor as thyself. What ridiculous things. It hasn't done any good in this world. It's the hope, one day you see the same love. Where is that love? The love is the most destructive force in the world. Because it's born out of the division in man's consciousness, you know. It's a very destructive force. That is history, not my personal opinion. If you want to interpret history in a different way and satisfy yourself, that's a different story. We have the Oxford historians and Cambridge historians interpreting the events of the world in two different ways, you know. It's all right, there won't be any historians left to apportion the blame to either Russia or to America or some crazy small country, you know. So I think the individual has to free himself, you see, from the burden. That's all. And whether he will have any impact on the whole of mankind is not really your concern. You see, not that you are indifferent, that you are not concerned about the mankind. You are part of the mankind. You can't separate yourself, you know. How can you separate yourself? Where can you go? Run away and sit in a cave and meditate? Wherever you go, you carry these thoughts with you. So you belong to this society. You still have to use those thoughts for survival in this world. So you cannot separate yourself from the society. You can separate yourself from the society only when you see the whole burden is thrown off. You are out of your system completely. And so such an individual will not be in conflict with the society. He is in perfect harmony because that's all that is there. What can you do?
Why that's the case, what is it all about? What is life about? If that's the Damocles sword hanging above humanity.
Life is going along in its own way. See, I don't know what exactly you mean by life. Do you want to define life?
This what we're doing. Define. Breathing and listening and sleeping.
That will destroy.
What's coming next? What's the next stage?
Stage is already here. Yes, I don't know what you mean by next stage. What is the next stage? Next stage for every individual.
Well, it seems you want to experience
next already here. Yes, I don't know what you mean by next stage. What is the next stage? Next stage for every individual.
Well, it seems you want next to stage, experience
next stage it. For every individual is the physical death. That's all. He will die one day. So he is doing everything possible to push that as far as possible. And I'm certain that medical technology will one day find out, you see, the way of keeping you alive for 150 years, 200. Curse them.
We
assume that they are our parents. That's all, you see, that is not really the problem, but we are here, somehow.
When you see a newborn child, what does it mean? I mean, you see...
Why do you want to mystify? A newborn child is a newborn child. It's the result of, you see, the mating of two humans. They make love, you see. Is there any meaning in making love? If there is any meaning in making love, you see, there is a meaning in the child's arrival here. Now, it depends upon, you see, what you mean by meaning. Why are you looking for a meaning? Why should there be any meaning? What for? You obviously don't see any meaning in your life. Everything you do, you see, seems absolutely meaningless to you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be interested in trying to find out a meaning. No?
Something.
Sure, yes. Why are you looking for a meaning?
Meaningless, otherwise are meaningless.
Don't bother about the others, you know. Don't bother about the others, you know. The whole world is an extension of you. That's all. The way you are thinking, the way you are feeling, the way you are experiencing, everybody in this world is experiencing, feeling and thinking exactly the same way. You may not be thinking of God, you may not be thinking of God realization, enlightenment, but you see, you may be thinking of something else, you know. I don't know what you are thinking about. So the goal is, maybe goals may be different, but the mechanism or the instrument which you are using to achieve your particular goal is no different from those who want different kinds of goals. That's all that I'm pointing out. So, but why should there be any meaning?
But a baby obviously has no goal.
The baby has a goal to survive. You see, from the moment the child is born, you see, the survival. Milk. That is the instinct, you see. The instinct is there. To feed itself, to survive, and to reproduce one like that. That seems to be the way what you call, you see, life is expressing itself. That's all.
It doesn't do any harm. It has no schemes.
Our schemes have created the mess. That's all that I'm saying. How to live. The how to live that is imposed on us by our culture is the one that has created the problems for us. That is all that I'm pointing out. Is it possible for you? This is a rhetorical question I am throwing at you. To be free from how to live. You replace one how with another how. That's all. That is what you mean by life, I think. You see, how to live. Living is the problem, not life. Life, we really don't know anything about life. So what we call life is the one that makes the body respond to these things, stimuli, you know. Body is responding. There is pulse, there is beat, there is throb. Those things stop, then what you call the clinical death takes place. So that is not a death in the sense in which we use the word, because that is the basis for life. So life is continuing. Not the way, you see, you want. You see, your form has disintegrated into its constituent elements and those things have become the basis for the continuity of life. You know? So that is no consolation to you. You want to continue for 100 years, 200 years, and then after that, beyond, after death, God knows what. So that instrument is interested in continuity. So this is continuing. It is not interested in 100 years or 200 years or the death, you see, the end of this. Shape changes, form changes. That's all.
So what's happening to the human being after his body died?
That's what I have told you. If you bury it, the worms have a field day. You know, they will have an extraordinary feast. You know. And if you throw it in the waters, the fish or all the other things, you see, will have a feast on.
What do you prefer?
Me, it's not my problem. It's the problem of those who want to get rid of this body because it will begin to stink, you see. They cannot, you know.
But a human person has a mind which continues or goes somewhere else with whatever his experiences are?
Not his experiences, because his experiences while he is living are not his own. They come from the totality of man's experiences. So, that will continue. Every time you feel jealousy, you see, every time you feel that, you see, you are adding to that. You see, that is going on, the world mind. There is no such thing as your mind or my mind. You see this, you breathe, the air, you need air, you see, so that you can survive. If you don't breathe, that's the end of you. So in exactly the same way, there is this thought sphere that is always there. It's not yours, not mine. So we use that for purposes of communication. First of all, we have to communicate to ourselves. This is the most important thing. Communicating to others comes next, you see. So we constantly communicate to ourselves. If that communication is not there, we are not there. You, as you know yourself. So, what I mean by communication is, you tell yourself that you are happy, that you are unhappy, that you are miserable, that you are bored, that you are this, that you are that, that you are not this, not that. You see, that goes on and on. That I don't see any meaning. What is the meaning? You see, this is the communication I am talking about. So, if that communication is not there, there is no need for you to communicate with anybody. So you communicate with others to maintain this communication with yourself. So this is important to you. See, this communication becomes possible only when you see, you depend upon or draw from, you see, the totality that is passed on from generation to generation. That's all that I'm pointing out. So the man has, through evolution, developed this capacity to draw from that, you see, quicker. You see, animals take longer time to learn a language. And then you see, to behave, you see, the way we teach them. So man has, through centuries of evolution, has developed this capacity, you know, to absorb things quickly, to continue. So that is, communication is, becomes possible only with the help of that. If that is not there, no communication is there inside of you, except the basic needs of the body. The animals also have thoughts. They have tremendous instincts, you know. They have more powers than the humans. The clairvoyance, clairaudience, the capacity to communicate to the others. All that, you know, telepathy, what you call. They don't use those words, but they have that, you see, there for the survival. But man has lost them. Because he is using thinking instead of the sensory perceptions and the instincts called clairvoyance, clairaudience and telepathy and all that. And so he has lost them, you see. And then he wants them again, and sometimes, you see, the hidden things come up and you attribute some extraordinary things to it as a spiritual man. You see, everybody has, these are all the sensitized thoughts. When the thoughts are sensitized, you see, then you see a few individuals, you see, develop these things, you know, instincts. But man has no use for them anymore, except those people who want to be spiritual. So they feel the necessity for that kind of a thing, not for purposes of survival, but for spiritual growth. So through thinking, man has made it possible for him, you see, to survive more efficiently than the animal. So it is that very thing that has been the curse of man, and it is going to destroy him. But anyway, there is nothing that we can do. But the hope that, you see, that instrument will save him is a hope that really has no way of fulfilling itself. So if you think, you see, the hope is necessary, and optimism which you are talking about, you see, is very important to you, then it is all right with me.
Well, I didn't use myself the word optimism.
No.
But as I understand, a physiological process you underwent, and maybe that's the next step, and mankind is going through evolutionary mutation.
He would have, you see, everybody would have been, you see, in this situation if it had not been for, you see, the culture. You see, the culture has created the model of a perfect man.
But he likes to be a counterculture here.
You know, counterculture is part of the same. You see, they go together, you know, you see, this is a reaction to that, you see. So when you find it is impossible for you to reach your goal and see the meaninglessness of that, you see, then you create, you see, the opposite of it. So, the counterculture and the perfect man that the culture has created and placed before us belong to the same. They come from the same source. So,
but culture would be conditioning and counterculture would be deconditioning, and once you decondition in
processes. It is conditioning you in a different way. It is not possible for you to be left alone with conditioning. No matter what you do, you are conditioning yourself. You see, the unconditioning that they are talking about, the psychologists and some of those spiritual goons we have in our marketplace today, is a bogus affair, you see. You know, you will find out. You will be surprised.
You find out, yes.
Yes, that anything you do is conditioning you in a different way. So this talk of unconditioning or freeing yourself from conditioning has no meaning. But, you see, the conditioning there in the body is intelligence. So to talk of freeing yourself from conditioning, which is a very superficial thing, has no meaning, you see. Your reflexes are conditioned. The functioning of the body has an extraordinary intelligence, and that is conditioning. That's what I am talking about. It is done in a different way through the genetic control, not through the control of your ideations and mentations.
Well, so, we have been experimenting with drugs which have been deconditioning our reflexes.
That is a temporary.
Yes, but very temporary state might introduce you to other ways of being.
Well, for what purpose? So you create another man, which is no different from the other, you see. So, even this genetic engineering that they are indulging in is not for the benefit of mankind, because, you see, the technique will be handed over to the state. The state will use that to control every individual instead of brainwashing, which will take centuries. Through an injection or through the manipulation or what they call the genetic engineering, you can turn everybody into a soldier and fight your battles. It's very easy. So it is not in the interests of mankind to develop that. So in any case, no matter what we do, it is not in the interest of any mankind. Because anything that is born out of that is destructive in its very nature. Because it is a protective mechanism. It is protecting itself. When you protect yourself here, when you are seeking security here, there cannot be any security in this world. That's a fact, whether we recognize it or not. So this has no social content. I'm emphasizing all the time. Now if you are freed from the goal, you see, of a perfect man, a truly religious man, then, you see, whatever is there begins to express itself. Nature is creating unique individuals. Each one is different, physiologically different. Whereas the culture has placed before us an ideal man, a perfect man, a truly religious man, modeled after this teachers, you know, Jesus, Buddha and all those religious teachers. So that is why, you see, we are all caught up in this misery. Perfect man does not exist at all.
Who are you?
I wish I knew.
Mm-hmm.
That question, I wish I knew. I don't even want to bother about finding out, because I have no way of finding out, you see. If I knew that, you see, that would be a great disaster for mankind. You know that, you see. If the thought that I'm an enlightened man or free man enters my head, the world is in trouble. Then you go around freeing people, enlightening people, and set in motion, you see, another counter-destructive force in the world. We already have enough cults, you see, enough groups. Why add one more?
You enjoy your life?
There is no time for me to think of it.
No, but when you're sitting here, you feel okay? Talking to us? You make friends?
I don't even know.
You know the concept friends?
Yes. I know one thing, I don't have enemies, so that does not mean that everybody is a friend, and if I say that everybody is a friend, that does not mean I don't have enemies. It's not that I'm playing with words, but what do we mean by friend? Huh? What do you mean by friend? I don't know. This is...
Well, there might be funny people.
No, I do use the word friend, I know what it means.
Somebody comes to you and says, I'm your friend, so you have to...
I'm delighted to meet a friend. What do you want me to say? It's not that I don't know the meaning of the word friend. Huh?
But are you a friend of humanity? I mean, do you care about humanity? I mean, is it easy to tell human people, well, they're going to be blown up?
What am I doing now?
I don't know.
Telling you, see? Yeah. I take it or leave it. I'm not here to convert you.
You were mentioning communication. What is the purpose of communication?
No communication is possible and no communication is necessary. When we understand the meaninglessness and the ridiculousness of trying to
I didn't come here to hear meaninglessness. I came here because there was some more meaning added to whatever we knew already or did not
I'm surprised that you see have made some meaning out of this. I don't know. Really. I don't know if it makes any sense. I'm just singing my own song. I'm like a raving maniac, you see. You know, talking, singing my song. If somebody listens to me or not, interested in it or not, it's not my concern. You know?
But would you be doing this if nobody came to listen?
I don't consider any hypothetical situations.
Right.
You know, if nobody comes to see me here, I did not, for example, come here expecting to see anybody. See, my talking is, believe it or not, is incidental. You know, I've been wanting to come here to Amsterdam for some years, not to liberate, you see, the people of this country. But just, you see, that's all. I came here because I haven't been here for 30 years. And so I said to myself, all right, let me go to Amsterdam for a few days and our gracious friends have offered their hospitality. Yes. What do you want me to call them? My horrible enemies, they were good enough, gracious enough to offer the hospitality. So I find myself here, you know. That's all. And then, so the whole thing has just happened, you know. I didn't expect, you see. That man threatened to bring all his colleagues from his school. Not one has come here.
If you say this
not
is,
one.
You're talking is incidental.
For whatever reason. I'm not blaming him, you see. I was very reluctant, you see. I don't want to have anything to do with these the philosophers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you see, this thing I never expected, you see, at all, you see. Just incidental. If you are not here, what I would do, I don't know, maybe watch television, Blues Brothers, or... And he has a lot of books on crime fiction. That's the only thing I read. Because every other book tells you how to improve yourself, how to change yourself, how to be this, how to be that, you know. But here is some action, you know, is going on, crime fiction. Unfortunately, I have read most of them. And he has given me two books which I haven't had the chance to begin. So he has a lot of books. Probably I'll be reading that book or watching television or go out and see the windmills, which I did today, you see, you know. You have lots and lots of them lined up somewhere there. I don't know what I would do. So.
But you say the talking here is incidental, but the talking during your years has been a part of your...
This seems to be the...
life.
Yes. I don't know how people come to know of me just the way you all have come to know of me.
I don't know if you care to speak about it. Somebody, the last time I heard you speak, I didn't know all these things which were mentioned in these...
Yes.
Articles.
But there are a lot more.
Some kind of physiological process you understand.
You will read that book, you see, and you will find it. I'm not responsible for that book. I don't even know what is there in that book, you see. But anyway, I must have said all those things, and I don't retract, that is the word, or deny anything, you see. So I am not...
But is there a meaning to the process you underwent?
Certainly. It has a meaning to me.
And what does that mean?
And that certainty is something which cannot be transmitted to anybody. I know that, you see.
But isn't it in the back of your communicating to us or talking to us?
No. No.
I mean, you wouldn't be talking here if that thing hadn't happened.
I have been talking all my life, unfortunately. You see, something or the other. When I was here last time, 30 years ago, I was here on a world-saving mission.
Mm-hmm. It helped until now.
Now I see. It's better off without me, this, the world. You know? So, now I don't have any such illusions. Talking is not for the purpose of saving anybody, liberating anybody, or anything. So many people are recording. I have nothing to do with it. What they do with it is their own affair, you see. You know, I don't carry anything. You see. I don't even have one book with me. So I don't have anything to do at all, you see. You know. I am a gypsy of some sort. I have been moving this. I was telling my friend, I'm 65 years old, you may have read there. Out of that 50 years of my life, I have never lived in any place for 6 months at a stretch. So, somehow things have been happening, you see, somehow or the other. And so, it's not that I'm restless or move. That's all that I have done in my life, you see. So, the traveling is like eating my food, you see, you know. If I can't travel, maybe, I don't know what I will do. Such a situation may not at all arise. As I was telling my friends the other day, your friend, what is her name, Alexandria, she was here. She interviewed me to write some article. I said, my needs and goals are the same, you see. So when your needs and goals are the same, life is very simple, you see, you know. So if I want something, you see, the means for the fulfillment of that want must be, you see, with me. Otherwise, I don't even want anything. So as I was saying a minute ago, you see, I don't want a thing in this world, you see. That means there's no thinking at all. I have no questions of that kind. So if I cannot, even this is decided, you see, by the situation in which I find myself, you know. So, it's a very peculiar situation, you know. When I ask for a visa, they gave me 1 month's visa. So, after 1 month I go, I'm always in transit. Always in transit. So, you see, if Holland does not want me, I go to Switzerland. If Switzerland does not...
But you're spreading gossip in Bangalore, I see.
Huh?
You're spreading gossip in Bangalore.
Gossip?
Yeah.
What is that?
About your son being ill, you're not coming to see him?
He's dead anyway now, you see. Yeah. He's gone, but anyway, no matter what I do, they are always interested. I didn't want to go to see him. They said, you are a very heartless fellow, your son is dying, you see. How can you ignore that? Should you not go? And my friends, you see, prevailed upon me, you see, he wants to see you after all. Yes. Alright, I said that. And that you don't have there. The other papers in Bombay ask me, you are supposed to be an enlightened man. See, how can you still be interested in your son and visit him very often in the hospital? What am I to do? Mm-hmm. If I don't go, they find fault with me. If I decide and, you see, yield to the, you know, the demands of my son and my friends, they blame me.
Did your visits please him?
Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose so. Then they don't leave. He says, why your son? There are thousands of people dying of cancer in the Cancer Institute. Why don't you go there? You see. What am I to do, you see? So I say, I do this because, you see, there is a demand here. The demand comes from those hundreds of cancer people dying there in the hospital, would you go there? I don't know such hypothetical situations don't exist for me. And this situation has arisen because of peculiar circumstances. I happened to be in India, and so he happened to be in Bombay, so I went there, that's all, you see. He died, and that's the end of the story. So what did you do? Did you not do anything? I said, I just visited him. So that seems to be the concern of everybody. What am I to do?
You went because he asked you to come.
He asked me, and all the others around him asked me, and so I went there. And so. This is simple, I don't know why they should turn the whole thing into a big issue. It is their problem, it's not my problem.
If you want to help someone, do something.
What can I
do? No, but I mean anyone. You do exactly that what the person wants to be helped.
It depends upon, you see, it depends upon the situation in which I find myself. You know? Mm-hmm. That's all. Yeah. The situation is not the same. I am not prepared to meet every situation. Now, you see, as in things, when things arise, I have to deal with them. You see, I am not thinking about all the conceivable situations in this world or in my life. As far as I am concerned, I have no future. Every day it's the same. From here I go, probably to New York or someplace, you see, California, there. People come, the questions are the same, no matter where they are, exactly the same.
But do your answers change?
Questions, if the questions change, then yes, my answers. Then I don't have to give the answers. You know? Yesterday I was telling here in the same thing, you see, the frivolous questions they ask, so they get frivolous answers from me. Silly questions they ask, so they get silly answers from me. There are no serious questions at all. So if there are any serious questions, there are no answers for them. So I don't have to give any answers. It's not that I'm playing with words, that's a fact, that's a reality to me. So I've been explaining all the time, you see, that why we ask the questions, and those questions arise from the answers we already have. Our problem is to free ourselves from the burden of those answers, and not throw those questions at somebody who you think has answers and wait for his answers. So his answers become part of the answers that you already have. One more answer. So nobody is listening. Can't listen. So it is not a question of fulfilling myself. It's not a self-fulfilling thing for me. It is, how can it be a self-fulfilling thing? From morning till evening, sometimes I have to talk. The other day, went on till 2 o'clock. It depends upon the situation. So it is not a motiveless thing. You see, this a certain kind of motive is created in me by your being here. And that motive is to point out the absurdity of trying to communicate on that level. So if, and no communication is possible, when that is clearly understood that no communication is possible on that level or any other level, and then there is no need for any communication. So, we say goodbye, nice meeting you. That's the end of the story. I think that's enough. It's 9.
Smoke cigarettes.
Oh yes, by all means.